FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and this is the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and I am in Toronto at PDAC. In case you don't know it, Prospect Developers Association of Canada, the largest mining show of its kind, certainly in North America, probably the world. Just bumped into Ivan Babic. He's executive chairman of RN Resources, one of our larger sponsors, and we were just talking about the mayhem in the market that took place on Friday. I mean, you saw gold plunge close to $60. The market's down over 3,500 points in just a few sessions. It seems like the world's falling apart. We got coronavirus. We've got all the troubles of the world. And so many out there think that this is it. This is the big one. We're just not going to recover. But Ivan, it's great to see you. And hey, what's your opinion? I mean, you just saw these stocks get slammed. You thought the venture couldn't go down any more than it already has, and here we are.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and you know, I think we saw a bit of history last week with coronavirus impacting the markets as much as it had. I'll point out a few things, and I certainly think it's way overplayed. SARS, MERS, H1N1, these were things that I understand that to be much more severe by an illness than corona, and we got through those no problem. Excuse me. And so I think that this is a glorified flu, and I feel really empathetic towards the people that are dying from it. I think the world doesn't realize that 650,000 people die a year from influenza, which is a much bigger number than we're even dealing with in terms of being infected. And I know the number can go up, but either way, if you look at what was happening right before this coronavirus took place, we were going negative interest rates in Europe and Asia. We were dealing with a lot of economies that were inflated with debt that were needing to do a lot of QE. And, you know, we're in an electoral year. The Dow was at 29,000. You know, the predictions was 34,000 this year. That's usually a selling trigger. We knew it was toppy. And right now we've reset to about 25,000. People are doing QE overseas. I believe the U.S. is going to lower rates three times in a row. And I don't have the coronavirus. I've been on a plane for the last 2 weeks. And if I get it, I'm going to stay at home. Likely would advise other people in Vancouver and just quarantine myself and my family for 10 days as I would with the flu. So I think it's overplayed. One point I do want to make, because this impacts us a lot, is the day yesterday when the market was plummeting, all commodities were going down, copper held. And I know the rebuttal is it went down prior to corona. There's a seasonality factor in copper that it usually does sell off that time. But the fact that it was green most of the day on Friday is a very bullish sign for copper, regardless if it was pre-sold with the virus. It did not participate in the panic.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I should mention your website is aurynresources.com. The ticker is AUG on the TSX and on the New York American. And your stock took a hit for sure on Friday. I should mention that I am a shareholder in the interest of full disclosure, and I'm probably going to go out and buy some more come Monday because, you know, it's just, this is ridiculously priced at this point. So you look at gold, it took a $58 hit, close to $60 on Friday. And was it just part of the panic taking place?
You know, I heard there was a lot of margin calls, and I heard Japan was trying to support their currency as well. And I think there's a lot of moving parts that we don't know about. There always is with gold. I always like to see volatility in gold because it indicates a major move coming forward. And if you listen to some of the bigger U.S. firms such as Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, I believe $1,800 and $2,000 gold has finally come out in their buy targets for it. And so, you know, seeing the volatility, the shakeup right before a big move to the upside is what I'm going to predict in the next 12 to 18 months. I think we're going to see an incredible recovery in the gold price, fueled with 3 rate cuts, a lot of QE. I think we're finally going to see that gold market we've been talking about painfully for 7 years, we've been waiting for. But no, this is healthy. This is really healthy for not only the markets, it's healthy for gold to kind of reset. And I'm just happy this happened now, not later in the year, because we can get over it and start to stabilize and go into this robust bull market in commodities that we think is coming.
Oh, for sure. Could not agree with you more. And when we look at, still gold is way up from where it was a year ago. Silver is down, under $17. It's just, I don't think it's going to last. We're looking at a gold to silver ratio of 95 or better to one. What's it going to take? Is it going to go over 100?
Oh, it's hard to say. I think it will. It could very well do that. But let's rewind to 1 week ago today. The coronavirus was just as apparent as it was on Friday, but nobody was panicking. Why did everyone decide to panic in the final moment and react this way on all of their investments? The Dow and gold, silver and everything went out, right? I think this is, again, a very, very fortunate downturn that's going to just turn towards the upside on a violent rally, much like we saw in 2008. Although I think there's a bigger correction coming in the next year or two post-election. I think this is, a good reset for a really good year that's going to come forward.
Yeah. And when you look at 2008, I don't think they're going to allow there to be a Lehman moment like there was then. I recently had a guy who was on the board of Lehman, and there was a great animosity between Hank Paulson and the head of Lehman, which is one of the factors that he just decided to pull the plug. But now that the toothpaste is out of the tube, I can never envision the Treasury Department and the Fed to allow a major bank anywhere on the planet, whether it's the U.S., Asia, Europe, they're just not going to allow this.
No, I think that there's too much destruction that can be collateral damage on the backside of that kind of a blow up again. Countries are at risk, social balances are at risk. So I think you're right. They're going to do what they can to protect it or do soft landing on a crash. So I think we're in better shape going forward, not to think of Armageddon.
Oh, yeah. And hey, there's so much money flying around here. There's a lot of money on the sidelines elsewhere. But I'm sure that little investors are going to be flushed out of the markets by this decline. I mean, I've talked to people who've been on this roller coaster for 10 years now, and all of a sudden, they're talking about the virtues of cash.
So, interestingly enough, on Friday, if you followed our news this week, we just closed $15 million in financing. And whenever you see volatility or fear or panic or a crash, the first thing you have to do as a shareholder is ask the company, what's their staying power? How much money do they have? Really well planned, but a lot of luck behind closing the second tranche of our funding on Thursday afternoon before the Friday crash and putting ourselves in a position of multiple years of working capital or drilling money already paid for. The calls I got on Friday from several investors, it wasn't a panic. It wasn't, should I sell? It was, Ivan, is this a good time to start buying more or should I wait a few more days? And, we did our financing at $1.60 Canadian. The stock went down to the low 150s for a few minutes and people were buying it in style and guys were buying it everywhere. And, that's a chance that they would not normally have seen had there not been this coronavirus outbreak and stuff. And there's so much stuff going on with our company that if there's going to be a softening in the market for a week, a month, or a few months, it's something that's going to be recovering really well. I'd advise people, when you see knee-jerk volatility, be really careful. If the company's financed, you're better off just looking away from your screen for a few minutes and letting things calm down before you make any rational decisions. If we were unfinanced, that's a whole different world. And I think anybody who's not funded is vulnerable to further decline. But no, I think we'll have a really good recovery from this. Hold on to your shares. And if you have the courage or confidence or the liquidity and you want to own more, I don't think you're going to get a better window of opportunity to pursue things that you like, such as our company.
Yeah, and you raised, I should point out, a total of $15 million Canadian throughout the month. And it's not like the cash spigot's been shut off. You're well-funded to go ahead. And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about a couple of your projects there. You had news out on Kurabaya. The good news keeps coming out on this project. It's unbelievable ore grades here. Unbelievable.
So the grades are spectacular. The word used in this industry is bonanza grades. You're getting up to 15 kilo silver. We announced more 9 kilo silver on Friday, up to 42 grams gold. This is 1.5 ounce gold. These are spectacular. And so I was talking to the technical team and we're starting to learn the model of what this all could mean. And what we see is three dome complexes, basically, to keep it real simple, three volcanoes that occurred underground. And as they come up, they're radiating all these really high-grade bonanza veins. So they're the veins are actually pointing us to source, which should be on the edge of these domes. And, you know, when you go out and look for a gold mine, or you go out and look for a silver mine, a lot of times you're looking for arsenic, antimony, you're looking for indicator elements. Sometimes you're looking for gold in soils. You're finding like 0.1 of a gram of gold and you're excited. And then you're bringing some cool electric currents and magnetic currents to go in there and try and drill something hidden. We're using 15 kilo silver, 8 kilo silver. We're using 40 gram gold or 30 gram gold or 20 gram gold. We're using that to point us towards the source. Mm-hmm. And that's truly spectacular. And, you know, I've seen a lot of things in my 22 years of doing this. And by no means are we there yet. But if you want to be excited about a precious metal discovery that could be really, really rich in value, and you know, this project certainly shows that. And by the nature of how many of these domes are mineralizing, it gives us a scale. So if you know us well, we like really big things. And you know, there's a saying by our Newmont exploration or former Newmont global exploration team. They were telling us that great is king and oxide is queen. And we most certainly have king and queen here, but that's the two best things you could find in an exploration project, and we have it so far.
So I don't usually like to get technical on this, but what does the vein structure look like right now?
It looks like, well, there's vein swarms that point towards the dome. So if you imagine a bullseye and there's a bunch of really high grade veins coming from it. So we believe they're all coalescing on the edge of these domes, meaning they're all coming together. And so the target will be to drill where they all come together. And hopefully you can maintain that ridiculously high grade over meters.
So it could be the mother lode.
The mother lode. There's a mine. We're describing the system as low sulfidation, and it's just further away from the heat source that things cool off and the bonanza grade kind of comes in. There's a mine that's well known around the world called Ishikari. It's about 11 million ounces of 30 to 40 gram gold. Very similar in style to that kind of a system. Will it be something that could compete with that size? Way too early to tell, even for me, who's a really ambitious speculator. But I do like that it's the same type of system, because grade is truly king, and that will make the most profitability here. The fact that there's so much of it in so many different places that are pointing towards areas that it looks like the veins condense, that's a really good sign. So, you know, we came out with Committee Bay looking for the world's biggest gold deposit. We were blindsided by a much easier, bigger picture at Sombrero, which we're really close. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, of getting permitted. Yeah. And then, you know, while we're waiting for these permits, which do take time in parts of Peru, Curibaya can permit really fast. I'll explain that in a moment. But we found Curibaya. And, you know,
how did you find it? I meant to ask you the history of it. I know you told me a little bit, but you kind of just like tripped over it almost.
So while we came into Peru, the first thing we actually got about 4 years ago was this project called Curibaya. We had a third of what we have now, and it was ground that was dropped by Anglo. It was on this major belt of the biggest mines by the coast in the world, actually, for porphyry deposits. And we thought, look, big address, big mines nearby, Anglo shedding in the middle of the bear market, we have money, let's try it. And then we learned quickly that there was these two blocks that we really wanted that had all the grade on it that we're sampling now. And they were consolidated by a Peruvian company. And the Peruvian company told us politely, no, thank you, we have a mine. And so we impatiently waited for about 3 years until that Peruvian company ran out of money and became a hearing aid company. And so
that's a weird transition.
Well, the weirder thing was trying to negotiate a mining deal or an acquisition with a hearing aid company. That wasn't easy. As easy as it sounds, they were trying to divest. It was some work, but to be fair, we got through it. We got what we wanted and sent the guys out there. We had a small window to kind of do some work before year end last fall. And we started seeing the grade piled upon itself. And now everyone's paying attention because people are still scratching their head on these kind of grades coming out. One thing that a few have said, they said, guys, you're high grading it. You're going to the veins and you're sampling high grade. And we don't deny that we're doing that because we want to see the endowment. What kind of metal budget is here? The only rebuttal I have there is that if somebody can high grade something with the kind of grades we're seeing here over a 4x4 square kilometer area, 16 square kilometers, I'll take that project from them any day of the week because I know their source and I know there's a really high grade ceiling. Uh-huh. So it's extremely exciting from those perspectives.
Yeah, it really is. So going over to Sombrero now. So there is a lot of, not to get into the nitty gritty, but there was skepticism that you would be able to get this permit. Mm-hmm. Peru is hard. I mean, at one point, Peru was the world's leading silver producer. Now I think it's number two to Mexico. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of skepticism that you'd be able to get the DIA, or permit as it's called. And yet, here we are. You got it a couple weeks ago.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And, you know, I'm at the front of every investor, including my own, our largest shareholders. And I'm looking at it with great anticipation. I'm taking all the abuse of the time it's taking, that's what I've signed up to do. The DIA took us 6.5 months to achieve. And just for statistics here, that is the fastest DIA achieved in Peru in the last multiple years, probably 4 or 5 years, second to Barrick, who got one in 7 months, and then a bunch of others that are 9 to 14 months. So even though it seems like it took forever, I think that time that we're all frustrated with is more designed by how appealing the target is. It makes it feel twice as long. But now we're through that, and we've done it at record pace. We're going towards this social permit called the Consulta Previa. And if you followed our talks and what we talk about or our presentation, we've done a lot of work in the communities. We involved the agricultural arm of the government. We put in about $600,000, of which $120,000 or so was our own money. We brought in French cows, Australian lambs. We've really made an impact. Congress has recognized this as a very sustainable, positive way. They gave the community an award for the work we've done with them. And it's something that's caught a lot of traction going forward in Peru. It caught traction in neighboring communities. So that being said, we are in the short part of permitting. This will be quicker than the DIA for sure. The DIA was 6.5 months. And what's happening at Sombrero that no one knows about, that no one's talking about, this is the first time I'll mention it, is we're starting to look at what else is in our land position. We have 130,000 hectares, 1,300 square kilometers. We've only talked about the first 5%. And that's going to change dramatically as we get to go drill Sombrero. You're going to see more access. You're going to hear about a lot of other big targets. And my presentation I'm doing today at the Metals Investor Forum, I'm talking about 7 high priority targets so far. And these targets are not like we might have a deposit. These are things that could be independent, significant mines. Like, we truly have the other half of this belt, and you know the opportunity is going to get better. And I know when people hear me say this, they say, sure, Ivan, but let's see the drilling already. And I see it online, I hear it on phone calls. And look, the drilling's coming. And there's a good saying that we all know is good things come to those who wait, right? And I truly look at Sombrero, and I think we all should, as shareholders, as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Yeah, you're going to take a few more months to get there. We are progressing through at really good paces according to Peruvian standards, but we're almost there. It could be, you know, 2 to 4 months before we get through this social permit and we start to drill. And for me, that's exciting, but I want to see what the whole district can be at the same time, because I think we're going to have to be really defensive when we do start to make a discovery here. And when is the proverbial question? It might be hole number 25. It might be hole number 1. We don't know that, but the look is so big that we might have the other half of a mining belt in one junior. You know, this is tremendous. So we've been very vigilant about our shareholder base. We did this financing for $15 million. We had, you know, Ross Beattie was increasing his position in our funding. A cornerstone investor from overseas that's helped us build all of our companies has been a big part. My family participate extensively in this funding. We're trying to keep it as close to home as possible because we want to maintain the control we have over our share structure with really like-minded investors so that we don't get caught selling early going into this rabid bull market. The prize is big enough. The corporate interest is overwhelming, I'll be honest. And I've been through this with our last company, Caden, which resulted in a sale. It's truly been overwhelming. And either it's the base metal appeal, and I hear there's some big precious metal targets coming out of Sombrero, but you know, it's that home stretch. It's getting exciting again, and we can all, you know, count the days.
And it's important to emphasize here that you obtained those historic drilling results, the company that was looking for iron. So you're not just, it's not a needle in a haystack here by any stretch. You know where, you've got a really good idea where it is.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that point up, because, you know, one of the majors told me the other day, yesterday in my meetings I had, oh, Ivan, it's really early, you know. And I said, sure it is, but there's a drill hole there. I know we're going to drill it, but somebody's already drilled it and they hit the same grade that's being mined next door. And kind of showed us what all of our data means, and it gives us this really big look early. So you said the word needle in a haystack, and we've raised $100 million to get here. 60 of that's gone to Committee Bay, which is the number one needle in the haystack project on the planet. Massive reward, tough as nails, and we're still going to go. Like, that thing is getting closer. We're gonna finance it and market it probably next year into the better gold market, because that's a bull market project. But Sombrero's the exact opposite of a needle in a haystack. You can walk on copper and gold for 2 days, and you can actually probably tell me where to drill on the project, is what I've heard.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of the rocks. Yeah. They're blue-green, you know, oxidized copper. You just see it there. You don't need to be a geologist to figure that one out. So share structure, plans for the future. You mentioned the splitting the company up into three separate companies.
Yeah, so I've talked about that. I think with you as well, and a lot of my podcasts recently, is that we're starting to see three tier one exploration opportunities in our company. Committee Bay is the obvious one. We see Sombrero as even more of an obvious one with lower risk, high probability. And then Cray-Bia is just taking us by storm, and it's getting better. Each time we go there, it gets better. So our question mark was this. We've talked about Homestake Ridge as being a deep value proposition for our company, and it would really support a Canadian spun out entity. We're doing a PEA on it. I don't think many people know that. It'll be out in the next 2 weeks. And this was a condition of us considering SpinCo, because we want to see some deep value in the Canadian side. So that should be out in March. We wanted more conviction with Cray-Bia, and we put out that press release Friday. That's another layer with the first time we've put out a model that we're really confident about. And thirdly, we wanted to be really mature into the permitting of Sombrero. So all of those three things have happened. Now I'll ask you this, and as a shareholder, you know, would you like to have three shares on three tier one exploration opportunities, or one share with all three of them in one, right?
Well, I would say if it's going to go up to $10 or $20 a share on one, or it goes up to six or seven each on three, I'm kind of indifferent. But I see the point, because maybe the collective misunderstanding or misperception of these projects may be acting to effectively depress the price right now. But my money's on you. So here's a question for you. You've got so many projects going on here. It's you, Sean. You've got a world-class team. Should I be worried that you're stretching yourself too thin? I mean, I know you work 20 hours a day now. How many more hours a day can Ivan work?
Well, we've built a really big team, and our burn rate certainly identifies with that. We burn about $5.5 million a year to keep this team going. We still have a very good ratio of money into the ground. We have enough people to do this efficiently, and it actually will improve the company's individually their burn rates. I'll go back to a comment you made. If one stock went to $10 or $20, or the other ones went to $5 or $6 or what have you, I think that both Peruvian entities and Committee Bay and Homestake, they all have a chance to be 10 baggers from where we are today, first of all. And I'll go out there and say that, and I can sell each one individually and walk you through why, right? Secondly, when you divide it into three, the $5.5 million burn rate from Sombrero goes down to $2.5 million. Cray-Bia is going to be about $2 million, and Canada is going to be about $1 million a year. The technical team that we have can get a little bit bigger, so we can expand ourselves that way. We have no shortage of branding and marketing ability amongst our team. We can spread it out without hurting ourselves, do it very efficiently, have better burn rates, which is going to be the most important result there, Carrie, is going to be that maybe 90% of the money each company has goes into the ground, which is where you're going to make your discovery and your share price can go up. That's the ratio we want to improve more than anything else. If we drill one hole in Sombrero, the first hole, say we hit 400 meters of 0.7% copper, or 800 meters of 0.5%, whatever it may be, nothing else matters in this company. Nobody cares about anything else that I've just talked about. They just care about Sombrero. So you actually won't get paid for the other two in one entity. If we drill 30 or 40 meters of 10 kilo silver or 30 gram gold over at Cray-Bia, who cares about everything else? I mean, this is why you want to separate it. Mm-hmm. And the last fundamental reason is we're going towards this crazy bull market. It's going to be the best bull market I've certainly seen, maybe ever. I think that when you look at the market timing and say, what's your downside risk, Ivan? Well, finances and dilution is always a risk, right? And if we're going into a better market, it's going to be much easier to finance. It's really difficult And this is partly why we've raised the last $25 million since January last year. We've done it all ourselves without bankers. It's been really difficult to find an investor who likes gold, silver, and copper at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, and the last thing I'll point out is a lot of the majors want us to put Sombrero on its own. And we're listening because it's so big in itself and it makes sense for a certain crowd. So, you know, I think that what we're going to end up with, Kerry, is three companies that have significant interest, both investor-wise, corporate-wise, and really good focuses with the commodities that we're in. And I think that, you know, we spent enough money branding ourselves over the last 5 years that they should each trade, you know, really well. I'm a greedy shareholder and I'm a large shareholder. And if I can give myself one more share in each company and efficiently improve the efficiency of those companies and put them all in the position to succeed into the bull market, I most certainly would lead towards that direction.
Yeah, and because you got so many good projects here, so one of them becomes a star, basically the stock Orin will just trade on the basis of that with no view to what the other projects can potentially be.
Yeah.
So focusing on each position in a separate entity kind of does make a lot of sense.
If Sombrero works out, and that's your share you have today, and nothing else works out, but you get $15 a share, $25 a share for Sombrero, does it matter that we spun it into two or not? No. If the second of Cray Bio works out on the backside of Sombrero working out, well, now that gets really spectacular. And then if all three work out into this bull market, I say this tongue in cheek, but there'll be a book and a movie because it'd be the ultimate grand slam for us. And that's wishful thinking as a really optimistic speculator, but I don't mind being that optimistic. I just want those opportunities for our shareholders to have across all three in the coming bull market.
Yeah, and let's face it, if you weren't an optimist, you certainly wouldn't be in this sector, especially for the past 10 years where it was a major bloodletting going on.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We won pretty good for shareholders in 2014. We were annoyingly optimistic, and we actually pulled it off when we sold Kaden. And at this time here now, the prize is much bigger, and our timing with the market is spectacular. So I think that the consideration of a spinco, and that's what we're talking about today, just so we're clear, it's really high. I'd like to see a little bit of a recovery from this market we just endured on Thursday, Friday. And so a few variables. We want to see the Homestake PA come out and be received well. So there's a few things that really will determine that actual final execution, but I'm talking about the possibility of it. And, you know, from our shareholder base, and I argue that we have some of the best shareholders in the world, and I'll put you in that category because I find you to be
I'm flattered, I assure you.
I find you to be a very smart investor, but, you know, where I look at it from this perspective is, you know, what could we do to make incredible amount of wealth for those shareholders, for you, for the big shareholders? How could we monetize this even better? And so when you're a large shareholder of your own company, you've put a lot of your own money in, a lot of your family and your friends, you really get motivated with the most important underlying ambition, and that's to win for shareholders, and that's what we're all about.
And that's what we love about you, Ivan. Hey, good luck here. And one other thing, Sombrero. So it's potentially as a district, so you could be selling off pieces of Sombrero for a decade ahead of us, right?
How many spincos can one man handle?
Yeah.
you know what? There is something coming, really big precious metal opportunity in Southern Sombrero. That's away from the base metal stuff. And, you know, I think that it's early, but there's going to be opportunities like that that are going to come out of this belt. And we could do it repeatedly. Ross Beattie's done this better than anyone else. And he sold, I think, 15 companies. True mentor of mine. He's a friend. He's given me some of the best advice I've had, you know, coming into this business. And it's not dawned on me, you know, a lot of the success he had taking this route. He did it with more mature assets that were undervalued, and he leveraged into the copper prices last bull market. We're doing the exploration version, and I think the assets that he put together so intelligently, they don't really exist to us, and our strength is in exploration. And it's higher risk, it's harder to do, but the reward can be better because the discovery curve is the best curve in the business.
Yeah, and one thing he said at the last VRIC during his speech, Ross Beattie, was go big. All right, don't think small. Small thinking is not going to get you where you want to be. You got to go big.
All the money's made on the big discoveries. And if you have the ability to finance, if you have the shareholders to support you, you go as big as you can. And we certainly aim for that as every day we go out there.
Yep. And I'm expecting big things from you in the future, Ivan, which is why I'm probably going to buy more on Monday, because at 121 US, 160 Canadian, this is just a real opportunity that I'm looking forward to. Hey, you got questions or comments? Write me kl@carrylutz.com. Again, the website is aurynresources.com. That's A-U-R-Y-N resources.com. Make sure you subscribe so you get the latest notifications. You find out what's going on all the projects we just talked about. And hey, again, the ticker on the TSX and on the New York American is A-U-G. Ivan, pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.